Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. We are here perhaps to eulogize the Lakers 25-26 season. Appropriately, the three of us dressed in black for this show because that sure felt like a Lakers team tapping out last night. They looked ready to give up the ghost against the Phoenix Suns. Is that really the end? Is this the way it's all going to play out? From here for the Lakers, we got a lot to get into. DeAndre Ayton is not Clint Capella, apparently. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about what the Lakers did against the Suns. And boy, that was a disaster. We'll also talk about the three-game losing streak. Plus, is the media turning on Luka Doncic? All that and a lot more on the Lakers Collective today. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Turn on those notifications as well. Don't forget to follow us over on Apple Podcasts. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Temp. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, how are you doing? How are we feeling?
It's good to see you guys. I feel like we've been slowly eulogizing the Lakers for months now. So I don't think there's any one singular event. We were talking about that a little bit before we started the stream. But I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to get into today. I'm very excited for today's show.
In my defense, I only wear black t-shirts. So this is just normal day for me. I guess I'm always depressed.
How many black t-shirts do you actually own, Jovan?
I would say ballpark like 22 to 24.
Wow. That is commitment. Yeah. That is commitment to the black. It gives you sustainability, right? You're consistent.
I like having a uniform. I don't like having
are
to
they
pick
all the
what
same
what
brand
I,
or do you like mix
no, brand? I'm a big tester for those who follow my channel. I'm always testing like cameras and mics and different things. But I probably have like five or six different t-shirt brands.
Well, you are very prepared for this show.
Yeah.
Because my God, that was, I guess let's just dive into it. People in the chat are already, you know, not happy with the way things have gone lately for the Lakers, and rightfully so. Jason, last night, I thought the Lakers just got their asses kicked by the Suns. I went back. I don't know why I did this to myself, but I watched all of the Lakers' defensive possessions. It was worse than what I even thought live while watching the game. What did you think about the performance the Lakers turned in last night?
Yeah, you know, I think this is kind of why I find it so fascinating that there's so much to get into. So Synergy has this game chart that they use to essentially break down the flow of a game. I've talked about it on the show before, but on Synergy, it's a bar graph. On ESPN, it's a line graph. It's like different kind of like visual representations of the flow of the game. And that game literally went back and forth so many times that the Synergy game chart looked like a sine curve. Like it literally was just up and down as like it was the Suns take an early lead and then the Lakers work their way back into control in the late first quarter. And then the Suns end up taking a big lead and then the Lakers go on this massive run to flip a double-digit deficit into a double-digit lead. And then all of a sudden it swoops way back towards Phoenix in the early fourth quarter and then it swoops way back towards the Lakers right to the final couple of possessions. And so that's where, like, I think it's important to mention that there were stretches of this game where the Lakers look awesome, especially on the offensive end of the floor. There were stretches where you could really see the collective amount of offensive talent that they have just kind of mesh in a way that worked really well. Overall, I think there was a lot of encouraging stuff offensively in this game for a very physical, talented Phoenix defense that can protect the rim. I think there were some positives there. But ultimately, this is a defense that's broken on so many different levels, and there's a bunch of different ways to go at this because it feels unfair to go at any single player. Like it doesn't make a ton of sense to go at any single player because there's so many different guys who made mistakes during this stretch. And I know that we're going to talk about Luka and his defense when we get to that Luka segment later, but for the sake of focusing more on the team, the one thing I'll hit on right here, there is a level of connectiveness that you'll see with really good defenses when they get into rotation where the everyone seems to be on a string. You never really will see two guys rotate to the same player. There will be one guy that rotates and the next guy is going to the next guy in the chain. And after the shot goes up, they'll continue their rotation to get matched up for box outs. And they'll make sure that they keep certain guys off of the line. And like, ultimately we can talk about how the defense broke at various points during the rest of the show, but every time that the defense broke and they ended up in rotation, the Lakers literally looked like a bunch of dudes playing pickup basketball. Like, there was no understanding of where to go in rotation, no understanding of like what that progression looks like when you get beat. And, you know, we can say what we want about Luka, and Luka got his ass fried in that fourth quarter by Colin Gillespie. But like, ultimately, if you know that you have a guy on the floor that's going to get attacked, and by the way, a lot of the teams, even the good teams in the league, have guys that they know are going to get attacked, you need to have a plan with which for how to deal with that. And there was just very clearly no plan, no execution on that level. And I thought the Lakers just looked super, super sloppy in rotation down the stretch. Huge offensive rebounds. That Royce O'Neal offensive rebound that led to the final possession just not matched up after the shot went up. There's just too much sloppiness in the Laker defense to ever string together stops. And if you can't string together stops, you're not going to beat any good team in this league.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what just popped. Everything you just said pops off the screen on the rewatch when you're watching the Lakers defense. They look like there are times where they're executing different defensive schemes. Like the players are mixed up on what they're supposed to be doing. And what got me, and Jovan, I'm sure you can speak to this, how many times we saw the Lakers get beat on defense, a miscommunication, and then one or more players turn and throw their hands up and look at the rest of the guys. Like, what? Why did you do that? Why did you not cover for me there? Why did you not? The Suns looked very connected. The Suns looked like a team that played hard, that played with a belief that they could win and believed in the system that they were running. I thought the Lakers played like they were unsure of what they needed to do, nor did I think they really put in the effort to overcome any of those kinds of miscommunications out there on the floor just through sheer hustle. I thought they got beat in both areas, both connectivity as well as just general effort in this one. What did you see?
Well, and we're having this conversation at basically game 60, and yeah. I think that is concerning. I also think it's concerning that it feels like the Lakers season has died three times in the past week, with the Celtics loss of just being like the final straw of they just can't beat a team of a certain caliber. And then you have the Orlando loss, where they're supposed to be the clutch kings who always execute late game, and they have a late game meltdown, and then another late game meltdown and poor execution down the stretch against Phoenix. So it just feels like it keeps getting worse and worse. And this feels like rock bottom. I don't know if it could get any worse than this, but I guess we'll see. But I was really disappointed with the way they started the game. They get down 17-9. I'm getting to the point where I might just give up on the Lakers having a good starting lineup of any kind. This was like the final hope, and it just is not materializing. To me, like the way they started the game set a bit of a tone for the game, and just not getting back in transition. But to your point, like botching switches, guys not boxing out. I thought Mark Williams just kicked DeAndre Ayton's ass straight up in the head-to-head matchup there when they were matched up. Like, he's getting offensive rebounds and putbacks and finishes around him. And I just thought he was more physical and played with more motor than him. We'll get to DA a little bit later, but really disappointing performance after the story that came out. Might've been his worst game of the season all things considered. But I felt like this group has selectively turned it on all season, and it felt like if there was ever a moment to come out and like lay the hammer down and have an emphatic win and just like a wire to wire win against a decent team. And I'm using that lightly, because I think this version of Phoenix is a lottery level team. They're without their two best players, without a key bench guy in Jordan Goodwin. Like, this was not, second consecutive game the Lakers lost to a team that was without two of their three best players, when the Lakers are basically like healthy right now. It was disappointing. There's really no way around it. Like, it did feel like this group is as disconnected as they've been all season. And, they're not like finger pointing necessarily, but it just feels like everyone's kind of going in their own separate direction right now.
It really does. And this is not what we should be doing right now. Right now, to me, just watching the team, it feels like when they should be right now moving over to the fast lane, picking up speed, right? Instead, it feels like they're looking for the exit ramp when I'm seeing these guys out there on the floor. They're playing, I think, their most disconnected basketball right now at the time when everybody should be instead improving their play, especially now that they've actually got a healthy team out there. Jason, what do you think about that dynamic? Is this? I feel like they're a wounded boxer. They're dizzy. They're on the ropes right now, and they're looking for a way out. Is there a way back from this? Can they? I mean, we have a lot of basketball left to play. Is there a path back to this team getting to where they are? I hate to use the term. Maybe it's an exaggeration, but not embarrassing out there on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, it's all offense. I mean, some of this, like, I don't really view it as overly complicated as to why things are as dark as they are right now. Like, I know Phoenix on paper doesn't look very good, but they're strangely a very difficult matchup for this Lakers team because of what Colin Gillespie and Grayson Allen do, which is they're smaller, quicker guards that can both really, really shoot. Like, really, really shoot. So, for instance, like, are they the kind of guys that are going to go off against Oklahoma City? No, because Oklahoma City is way quicker on the ground. But this Laker team, even if you were to parse out their defense into individual strengths and weaknesses, the specific thing they struggle with is foot speed, and foot speed that can spread them out into space. Like, you want to know why? Like Luka, for instance, guarding Colin Gillespie, there was a lot of technique stuff that was brutal. Like, he just kept getting disconnected from Colin, which is, Colin's actually like one of the very best shooters in the entire NBA this year. Like, he's made more threes than Sam Merrill this season. You know, he's made, like, as a catch and shoot player, he's damn near 50% on like 200 attempts this year. He's a very, very, very good shooter. So, like, there's a level of like technique with Luka where he needs to be on him and connected to him defensively, where he was just making simple technique mistakes. But also on the final possession, Grayson Allen's going to beat Luka off the dribble. It's guaranteed to happen. He cannot guard him. Like, now there's a separate conversation we can have about, like, is it a problem that Luka cannot guard Grayson Allen? Like, yeah, it kind of is. But the point is that this team is kind of a bad matchup. And so they were able to go on runs either through defense to transition or by spacing the Lakers out, getting them into rotation and hitting catch and shoot threes or getting offensive rebounds. Like, that's a tough game to win for this Lakers team. I know that sounds insane to say, but that was a tough game for this Lakers team because they don't guard quick shooters very well. Go to the previous game. You got Orlando that can physically maul them the way they can maul them, right? Go to the previous game. Boston's playing some of the best basketball in the entire NBA right now. Their one pathway to counteract these massive weaknesses is to be just awesome on offense. And we did see stretches last night, whether it was like that mid-third quarter stretch where you're constantly going to LeBron in the post and he's doing work, or it's late fourth quarter where Luka's got his step back three going and Marcus Smart is contributing and Austin hits a big catch and shoot three. They can have stretches where their offense can carry them. But the bottom line is, if you really zoom out, Luka's been mostly bad since he came back from his hamstring. That was his first really good game. LeBron's been slumping offensively for a few weeks now. He's basically been a relatively inefficient 20-point-per-game guy. And Austin, in his last 13 games, has managed to score 20 twice in his last 13 games. So, like, say what you want about the Lakers' defense. The real issue, the reason why they don't look like they have at other points this season, is that this is a team that has one real punch, and it's the fact that they got three awesome offensive players, and they just can't get them all playing well at the same time for various reasons. I think Austin is still building rhythm. I think in a week or two, Austin will look better. I think Luka, as we've seen this year, every time he's taken a week off, he's come back and looked like shit, like literally every single time. So I wouldn't be surprised if a week or two from now, Luka's looking a little better. LeBron, I don't know if he's just worn down from playing damn near every game for the last few months, but LeBron is more of a question mark for me. I don't know if he just is what he is at this point. But in order for the Lakers to stabilize, they need their stars to play like they're capable of on the offensive end of the floor, because the defense just is what it is at this point.
Well, and Luka put up 41 on fantastic efficiency last night, three turnovers, but you'll take that in a game where he's got 41 on 12 of 21 shooting, 6 of 11 from deep, 11 of 12 from the free throw. He shot in a way that, frankly, he didn't shoot that way against Orlando. That was a big part of the problem. He was 8 for 24 against Orlando. So you got a good Luka offensive game. I do agree that there's still another level they need to get to. I didn't think Austin was particularly good in last night's game. If this team is going to go anywhere, and by go anywhere, I mean just be a threat, they're going to need to be a top-tier offensive club. I don't know, with LeBron playing the way he's playing, if Austin is playing this way, if they're ultimately going to get to that or not. Again, this is when you would expect to see them start to really gel and bring things together. It feels like they're drifting apart more than anything else. I want to continue on the offense, but Jovan, one of the things that really perplexed me in this game, you know, Jason mentioned it, Luka couldn't stay in front of Grayson Allen. Why was Luka on the floor for that final defensive possession? I was shocked that JJ Redick didn't make defensive substitutions. That's part of this conversation that we haven't gotten into yet. I thought in some of the key decisions in crunch time, I didn't think JJ Redick was up to par last night.
I agree. I mentioned that on my show last night. I also think it's worth noting that Luka tweaked his back at some point in the second half and was clearly grimacing, wincing in pain.
Can I jump in here for just a second, Jovan? I'm sorry. Did you guys see those last two step back threes that Luka Doncic hit? The one on Osu Iguodaro at the top of the key in the spin. Anybody out there who ever takes step back threes, if you've ever taken a spinning step back three, that is one of the most difficult shots to get your feet set and get lift on. Why is it that Luka looks fucking fine when he's playing offense, but he can't move his feet on defense? Like, frankly, I think that's bullshit. Like, straight up bullshit. Well, go watch the highlight of his step back three on Osu Iguodaro. It was one of the most athletic plays he's made all season. It literally looked like he was ISOing Rudy Gobert in the Western Conference Finals. Like, I'm not like Luka has done this limping around every time I'm struggling on defense thing. He's done that all fucking season. I'm just not buying it. Like, sorry, but I was watching the film in the fourth quarter and I'm like, he's moving fucking fine when he's got the basketball in his hands. Like, it's ridiculous.
What, you think he's sandbagging it on deep? I saw him get hung up on
you,
a bunch of
screens. I'm calling.
I hear you. I didn't put it so eloquently like you just did, but I did note like he had it offensively. He did not have it defensively for the last like 18 minutes. Clearly, I thought there was a decline there in terms of his physical state. Now, why that was, I don't have an answer to it, but I did feel like he was visibly much worse defensively over like the final quarter and a half. But with all that said, I did not agree with JJ's decision to go with that lineup. I didn't agree with several of JJ's decisions tonight. I thought Vando, go back to December when they had the stretch where they played Phoenix three times, I think in like a, you know, a matter of like 3 weeks or so. Vando was huge in that. Remember that Lakers had that 27-0 run, 24-0 or 27-0 from like the middle of the third quarter into the beginning of the fourth. Vando was a huge part of that. And they were able to turn the Suns over, get out in transition. That was when we started to see some of those LeBron-led defensive bench groups. And I mean, Vando had a rough shift and the Lakers were outscored by 15 points in 6 minutes. But I thought last night, especially with no Rui, Vando could have played more. And instead, JJ condensed the rotation to just eight guys. So I thought Vando should have been out there at a minimum to close that final defensive possession. And I mean, I think you could have even gone with Jackson Hayes, who I thought had some good switching moments defensively. So put in Hayes. I would have probably gone Hayes, Vando, LeBron, Marcus Laravia, and now you're switching one through five and you have several Banshees out there, several good rebounders out there, several defensive playmakers, and requisite level of size that and foot speed, at least by Lakers standards. That's how I would have closed that. I also would have considered putting Luke Kennard out there for the final play. I know that's a tough shot for a left-handed shooter to make on that double stagger into the corner, like to the right side, but you have a 50% three-point shooter on your bench. Rui's not available to be out there. And I get they wanted Maxi and LeBron to be setting the screen. And Austin is a 40%, whatever, catch and shoot guy. But I would have liked to have seen Luke Kennard out there as well. So I don't know who he's in there for necessarily. You're not going to have him as the screener, although maybe you could have tried to screen and then, maybe slip to the ball and pop out. But I don't know. I just felt like, I agree that JJ is a little bit, I would say dogmatic with, he likes a certain closing lineup, and whatever's the closing lineup for that game, he doesn't really make the situational substitutions. He did sub in Maxi, so I will acknowledge that for the screen, but I think he could do a better job with the offense defense stuff, because he tends to just be these are the five guys we're closing with. Unless it's a free throw situation, then he might sub in some free throw shooters. But outside of that, for the most part, he doesn't really do the offense defense game as much as I think he could.
Well, that Vando shift to start the game was one of his worst shifts of the season. Like, it was bad. Was like damn downright self sabotage.
But sure, like, but the, I mean, Vando, the alternative is you just.
Oh yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. I totally agree with you. He should have been out there. I think there's two ways to parse it out. Like, I think you could be like, yes, JJ should have subbed in someone for Luka on that possession, but as a bigger picture issue, you're not always going to have that luxury time and score timeout situation. So like at a certain point, you got to figure out how to get stops with Luka. So they're like two separate issues. But to your point, I think Vando was so bad in that first shift that JJ just kind of bailed on him entirely, which to your point, I wouldn't have done under the circumstances when they needed to stop.
I just think he needs to be like a minimum two shift player of like Vando's floor should be 12 minutes. I'm not saying he needed to play 25 minutes. It's just he played 6 minutes. He played one shift. I would have liked to have seen at least a second half shift.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Second half shift, something, especially when I felt the Suns energy wise was such a higher energy team than the Lakers were. Vando is your energy guy coming in off the bench. But even if you didn't have him with that second shift, Luka was getting picked apart all fourth quarter. There was no reason to just throw Luka back out there. I mean, just sacrifice him to the Suns, basically. Here you go. Here he is. Go target him. And that's exactly what the Suns did, as you would expect. And then I thought the Lakers overhelped and wound up giving up the open three. You at least want somebody out there to where if the Suns are going to play that switch hunting strategy, you've got somebody that can actually stay in front of their man or at least has a better shot of doing so. Who knows? Maybe Vando would have fouled Grayson Allen. He would have gone to the free throw line on that. We don't know how it would have played out, but I would have liked to have seen players who were at least capable of staying in front of their man because I thought their point of attack defense was awful for most of the night. Jovan, you brought up Luke Kennard. Jason, I want to ask you this. Luke Kennard has taken 1-3 combined in the last two games. How much of that is on JJ Redick? How much of that is on Luke Kennard?
You know, so I have complicated feelings on this because if you really dig into Luke Kennard's numbers, he's not actually the best movement shooter like that. Like he's to me, he's like a dead eye spot up guy and really a guy that has a good understanding of how to drive closeouts and play generally with an advantage. So I overall think that the Luke Kennard minutes have like looked more like greased in terms of the way that the ball is moving and the way that the Lakers are able to play off of the advantage that that their stars create. And that's shown in the numbers. I mean, their offense with Luke Kennard on the floor has been really good this season so far, at least in his brief sample size. I think like, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, I don't think the answer is let's start drawing up Luke Kennard flying off of double screens. If you really dig into his numbers, he's not a good enough athlete to be like flying off of a screen and setting his feet and shooting. To me, that's on the stars to continue to generate him advantages. And Luke's, like, people think that like a defense is going to help off of the same guy every time. No, there's a game plan piece there. Luke is marked as a laser. They're going to be attentive to him in a way that they aren't for a Marcus Smart. So like, it's really just about him continuing to make the right decisions off the catch, driving those closeouts, extending the advantage. One of the things I think he's done a really nice job so far with the Lakers is actually turning spot up opportunities into twos. So like little short pull up jump shots or shots at the rim. Jovan, I'm going to look up those numbers. So why don't you give your thoughts on the Luke Kennard stuff, and then I'll pop in with the numbers after I look them up.
I agree with basically everything Jason said. I would just note that this is, I think, a problem within LA's offense in like a general sense of just not generating enough quality looks for Rui and Luke Kennard. And you could push back and be like, well, of course, those are the two best shooters on the team. So teams are not going to help off them as aggressively as they'll help off of Marcus and Jake and Vando, et cetera. Even LeBron, right? I think we've started to see teams go under against him and encourage him to shoot more. But I think if your best shooters are consistently, like, I think the goal should be at least like 6 to 8 combined 3-point attempts per game for Rui and Luke. I don't think that's that insane, especially with how much they're playing, right? Like those guys are playing 45 to 50 minutes a night, you know, more recently. So if those guys are playing 45 to 50 minutes a night combined, I think 6 to 8 3-point attempts collectively is a reasonable goal. But there are several games where those two guys have played together where it's 3 3-point attempts, 4 3-point attempts, 5 3-point attempts. And if you cannot generate looks for your best shooters, I think you need to reevaluate your offensive approach and think about the spots you're putting them in. Think about the actions you're running, because if it's just stand in the corner and like, yes, there is still a gravity advantage there of if Luke Kennard's in the corner, Rui's in the corner, they're not going to help off those guys. And like, now you're playing 4-on-4 instead of 5-on-5. Okay. Like you could generate an advantage hypothetically, but I don't think the Lakers have quite squeezed all the juice out of their shooters the way that they need to.
Okay, yeah. I got the numbers for you. These are insane. So Luke has made already this season in just his handful of games he's played with the Lakers, he's 14 for 16 at the rim. To give you some perspective, all season Gabe Vincent made 3 shots at the rim.
Okay. That's higher than I expected.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, and rim finishing is not one of his main talents coming in. He has been impressive finishing at the rim.
Yes, 7 for 9 on mid-range pull-up jump shots, Luke Kennard. Compare that to Gabe Vincent this season on mid-range pull-ups. He was, 2 for 12. So there is a level of like, Luke is providing a ton of offensive utility beyond the three-point shot because he's being guarded that way. I love the part that Jovan said. I think I'd like to see the Lakers kind of go in this direction anyway, as in terms of like stacking their advantage, essentially being like, yeah, if Luke Kennard is on the floor with a non-shooter, they're going to help off of the non-shooter and Luke is going to be facing a lot of like tighter closeouts. But like, there's a universe where he's on the floor alongside Rui, then there's kind of like a compounding effect. I've noticed this a lot with like the Hornets, for example, like when LaMelo Ball's running a ball screen and it's Brandon Miller and Con Knipple on the other side of the floor, it's just really hard to guard. You know what I mean? And so like, especially in units when LeBron's off the floor, when Rui's playing at the four, if there's a universe where it's like Luke and Rui on the weak side while Luka or Austin are running action, I think there's a version of that that can be really, really difficult to guard. And to Jovan's point, actually help pump up those three-point numbers for both of those guys.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of the challenge is when we do see, as Jovan mentioned, now we're seeing teams starting to cheat off of LeBron and dare him to shoot. He was 0 for 3 from 3 last night. Last I looked in the month of February, he was down in the mid-20 percentile or percents in his three-point percentage. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. Sometimes we may see a lineup out there that features, if it's LeBron is out there with Luke Kennard, with Rui Hachimura, if that's another player that now teams are cheating off of. So there's JJ Redick only has so many options that he could put on the floor that guys that are not going to get cheated off of. Right now they're cheating off of LaRavia, they're cheating off of Smart, of course Jared Vanderbilt, but we're also seeing it with LeBron. It's part of the Luke Kennard conversation because there are just so many players that a team can say, up that guy, we're gonna leave that guy, but we're not leaving Luke Kennard, we're not leaving Rui, we're gonna get our extra defensive help here. And I think that's creating some issues for Kennard, who's not necessarily a quick shooter either. He's got a fairly slow release. He's a little bit hesitant to take the shot at times too. He does a really nice job attacking the closeouts. The 15-footer, he's near automatic on that. So he's still providing positive value. But what you want to see is that true, you know, knockdown three-point shooter come in. You want to see a 3-for-4 from deep game out of Luke Kennard, you know, at least once a week. And we're just not getting that right now because, number one, I don't think he's getting the looks. Number two, I don't think he is quick enough on the trigger to take the shot if there is any kind of a defense attacking him. It's not to say he's not turning it into positive value by attacking closeouts, but I would like to see the three-point volume increase a bit here for both Rui, but also Luke Kennard. Let's go here. Let's talk about big picture, this three-game losing streak. This is coming into this really important stretch of the season, and now they've lost 3 in a row. The Lakers are now sitting in the 6th seed. The Suns are breathing down their neck. They've now lost the season series from Phoenix. Jovan, where is this team going from here? Is this 3-game losing streak like the beginning of the end, or can they pull out of this tailspin that they're in?
I think they momentarily will. I think if you look at the next 3 games, it's Golden State, Sacramento, and New Orleans. So yeah. I mean, Golden State is going to be a tough game for them. We just saw them barely beat them in LA with against the same group essentially. And I mean, we just saw them lose to the Suns. So like, I'm not like putting that one in pen that they're going to beat the Warriors necessarily, but they should beat the Warriors. They should beat the Kings. They should beat the Pelicans. That could be a nice little bounce back opportunity, 3-game win streak potentially. But then after that, they play Denver on Thursday. They close the week out by playing the Knicks. Then they play Minnesota. Then they play Denver again. So the schedule gets a lot tougher after that. And right now, with how things are looking, I'm not optimistic. I don't really see the silver lining in all of this. And it just feels like, I mean, you mentioned they're in six right now. They're now 2 games back of the five seed. Like Minnesota is technically only one loss ahead of them, but they're 3 wins ahead of them. So the Lakers have a lot of ground to catch up on if they want to try to get into the 4 or 5 or you know, be a home court team. So I feel like it's kind of looking like they're going to be the sixth seed. I think they have enough of a gap over Phoenix, and Phoenix will, I think, especially with how long Brooks and Booker are supposed to be out, Phoenix will continue to drop games. I mean, that was the thing. It was like Phoenix just came off of 2 15-plus point losses. Like they were not playing their best basketball, but just a bad matchup for LA. And I would say, though, I think right now the way things are looking, I like my most likely scenario for how the rest of the season plays out is they are the sixth seed and they lose in round one in probably 5 games again.
I'm a little worried about their March schedule, like as it pertains to that 7 seed. Like, to your point, Phoenix is banged up, but like, you know how Denver had this like crazy last month where they were playing like almost every other night plus a bunch of back to backs? That's pretty much March for the Lakers. I think they have 17 games in March, if I remember correctly. So I'm a little worried, but one of the things that can be helpful there is them playing a ton could be what gets all their stars into rhythm. So like, ultimately, that's what we're watching. We're watching that offensive side of the floor, because if there's some sort of puncher's chance, it's like, what if they get the 6th seed? What if Denver ends up getting the 3 seed? And we've seen the Laker offense has had a lot of success against Denver over the years. What if, as Pete says, Denver has a Luka problem? What if that would be your one puncher's chance at maybe getting out of the first round? As a matter of fact, out of all those teams, I think a team that the Lakers can get comfortable against offensively is their best bet towards a first round, kind of like something to make the season seem less lost, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that matchup is going to be critical, whoever they wind up with. I am not as optimistic that they're going to stay in the 6th seed now that they lost this game because of the tiebreaker situation with the Phoenix Suns. They enjoyed a tiebreaker last year over just about everybody in the West. They don't have it this year, and now the Suns have already clinched the season series. They're only 1 game up on Phoenix, and Book is supposed to be back.
I really don't want to cover the play-in, man. I'm tired of the play-in. I feel like Bam Adebayo. I feel like Bam Adebayo.
But Devin Booker is going to be back. Like, they're talking about Tuesday, maybe Thursday. So he's back sooner rather than later. I know they lost Dylan Brooks, but that Suns team was playing like they had something to prove. That Suns team was playing like they believed that. And I know they had some tough losses before that, and they just turned it up because LA was in the building, and they in part turn it up because the Lakers are a terrible 3-point defense and the Suns hit a ton of threes. Yeah, that's part of it, but I'm worried about the mental makeup of these Lakers right now. If they don't turn things around after this 3-game losing streak, the way that they've been playing out there, the way they've been approaching these games, the way they're losing these games, on effort plays, on offensive rebounds, on the other team, it's inescapable to not come away from these 3 games with the sense that the Lakers are being outworked on a nightly basis. They're playing against a team that is playing harder than they are, that wants to win more than they do. And that's a difficult thing to quantify, but when you see it, you know it. And that is what we're seeing right now with this team. So I'm not confident at this point, after dropping that game, that they stay in the 6th seed. I hope they do. I'm with you, Jovan. I don't want to cover that. I don't want to cover the play-in. I don't want them to be in that situation. And I don't think that would be good for them, both strategically and fatigue-wise, to have to add another game to their schedule. But given the way they've played over this stretch, I'm just not sure that they're actually going to hang on to the 6th seed at this point. And this is not where I thought I would be 2 weeks ago. I thought, hey, they've got a pretty good margin here, but they play the Suns again. There's a 5th game against the Suns. I believe it's the 2nd to last game of the season. That could have the 6 or 7 seed on the line in that game. And I'm a little worried about that.
Six, guys. Seven.
I'm going to admit.
Exactly. And I'm worried about them against San Antonio in a playoff series. Like to me, like these physical athletic teams, like I think Minnesota would kill the Lakers in a playoff series. I think that Houston physically would cause a lot of problems for the Lakers in the series, and they've got some quickness on the perimeter that could cause some real problems. Like, honestly, not to create a new topic here, but like that 6-3 versus Denver would be probably their best chance to advance, just because Denver's defense has some holes in it. But even then, I think Denver would be favored, and they should be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. We mentioned that Denver has a Luka problem. Does the media have a Luka problem? That was all coming out of that Boston game. And I do think there's an element to this where the fact that they were playing Boston mattered, because some of the loudest voices were people who either are Celtics fans or used to be Celtics fans that are now national media. But that doesn't mean the criticism of Luka was unjust. Jason, we already got your thoughts on Luka. You made your thoughts on him pretty clear in terms of his defense. Jovan, what did you think about the coverage of Luka over the last week or so? Is the honeymoon over?
At least for now, yeah. I think the honeymoon is over. I talked about this last night on my show. I think there are three reasons why this has happened over the past week or so, and I'll just summarize those quickly. First and foremost, I think this has been something that's been building since the 2024 finals with Luka, where you had Brian Windhorst go off on that rant that he went off on the Scott Van Pelt show about Luka and his defense and winning behavior and all that. And I think that kind of started, I think it put a spotlight on some of the warts with Luka. And then you look at the trade and all of the reasoning from the Dallas side that came out. I think it set a clear narrative with Luka about his conditioning, his defense, his habits, shot selection, some of those things. Mm-hmm. Like there's been this sort of stamp on him, I think, that has been established. And then with things going south with the Lakers recently, I think a lot of that stuff has been brought up to light. That Lakers-Celtics game, according to NBC, was the most watched regular season game of the past 25 years. So there was a lot of attention on that game, and everybody was watching that game. So anyone with a platform, whether it's TV or podcasting, you see that game, you see that performance, and you're going to go talk about it and talk about Luka. So I think part of this has been like stuff that's been brewing around him in certain narratives for a couple of years. And then the second things go south, then those narratives, percolate to the surface. The second thing is I think this is part of just what comes with being the face of the Lakers. During the Darvin Ham era, although I think a lot of the criticism with Darvin was warranted. Like it was like First Take isn't talking about the bench rotations of the Charlotte Hornets or the Orlando Magic or the Denver Nuggets. They're talking about the bench rotations of the Los Angeles Lakers and who should be starting. And these conversations are happening around the Lakers and basically nobody else at like a national level, right? That there will be stars that are talked about and there will be teams talked about when they're in the news for a particular reason. But you look at basically every national show and podcast, they bring up the Lakers at some point for a reason, because the Lakers are the team in the NBA. They are the global franchise of the NBA. So you look at Kobe and the scrutiny Kobe faced during his career. You look at, I mean, LeBron was already facing it, and I think we'll never see anything like what LeBron faced in Miami and the decision and all the backlash he got. But LeBron has dealt with it in LA as well. And I think now there's been this passing of the torch of, you get a lot of positives with being the face of the Lakers. And we've seen like Luka leading the NBA in all-star voting and second in jersey sales. And like his star has been elevated to a different level than it was in Dallas. But with great power comes great responsibility. And you've seen that now his warts, like everything's under a magnifying glass. Everything is under a spotlight. Everything is in a fishbowl now to a different degree than it was in Dallas. And then third thing, I think we're at a weird point in the NBA schedule where like trade deadline's gone. Just had All-Star Weekend, this whole tanking situation happened. The aspiration hammer has not dropped yet. So it is like the point of the season where there is not much to talk about. And I think just being in this industry, when you see a topic that becomes a hot button topic, everyone starts to chime in. And so we've seen a lot of national voices talk about Luka. And some people have taken a contrarian take, but for the most part, I think it's been a lot of he's lazy, he doesn't play defense, bad habits, shot selection, all that. And then it starts to be like, who can have the best take? And that there's sort of a competitive element, I think, within the media of like, who can have the definitive take or statement or clip or whatever about Luka. And that's no shot at anybody, because I get the business side of it. But I think right now this has been like the thing to talk about over the past week has been, what's wrong with the Lakers? What's wrong with Luka? Can you win with Luka, et cetera? And so I think those three things combined of like, a lot of the discourse around Luka the last 2 years, being the face of the Lakers, and I think the media kind of finding something to talk about and this being a relevant topic, like you combine those three things and you get the past week of coverage.
Yeah, that's you're hitting the nail on the head there, Jovan. Like there's a huge difference between like the TV economy and then like national NBA media, got like the Zach Lowe's, Kevin O'Connor's, dudes that have been covering the league forever. Like there's like a day to day with them where we always have games to cover. So like, you know, on my show, do we talk about Luka? Yeah, we do. But like every day we're reacting to this game, we're reacting to that game. There's power rankings, there's that kind of stuff. When you're on these debate shows or these big ESPN shows or these big major network shows, you get out of the Super Bowl and you're not going to sit there and break down Pistons Spurs. Like you're going to hit big national topics, narrative based topics. And this Luka one is just right down the pipe, so to speak. Right. Like it just fits that world perfectly. And honestly, like, I do think that there's an element of this that's worth hitting on, that like this stuff, there's value in it in a weird way. Mm-hmm. Like, so for instance, Luka got absolutely dragged for the way that he complains at the refs by Zach Lowe. And last night was like Luka's best behaved game with officials all season. like by far. Like it was like a completely different guy than what we had seen. There was even like one in the first half where he started to complain. You could tell he caught himself and he like started running back on defense. And by the way, this is something worth mentioning. Hey, Luka, you got your highest amount of free throws in a game since January 26th. Because when you actually treat the refs with respect, you tend to actually get a better whistle. Like just a little note to just kind of stow away for later. But anyway, I think in a lot of ways, like this stuff helps. Like LeBron did get criticized at various points in his career for things, and then he addressed those things and he became a better version of himself. Like I do think the embarrassment of him getting fried by a mediocre movement shooter last night will be something that drives Luka to become a better defensive player in the long run. And so I love the way Jovan broke it down. Like some of this is just the way the ecosystem works, but at the same time, there is a value in accountability, in that it tends to help drive people in that direction. LeBron had the most embarrassing moment of his entire career in 2011 and got absolutely dragged for an entire summer. And what followed was a 9-year period that stamped him as no worse than the second best player of all time, if not the best, made 8 straight finals, all these different things. Like this is part of what comes with the responsibility of being one of the very great basketball players to ever play the game. There's one of the things that you can say about our show is we've been this show, the three of us, we've been critical of Luka when he's been deserving, and we've come on here and sung his praises when he's been deserving. There's a cycle that comes with this sort of thing. Like there's something weird about NBA legends. They become literal legends. There's another side of this coin, which is you become deified on the other side of it. Like if you solve these things, Luka, and you hoist the trophy, you will be forever remembered. Like, look at what happened to Dirk after he won the title. Sure. You know what I mean? So, like, it goes both ways. There's criticism, but there's deification. And it all comes from going through this process of becoming the best basketball player that you can be.
And that gets to Jovan's point. That gets magnified by the Lakers. By the Lakers brand is going to magnify all of that criticism, that responsibility, all of that. It's going to magnify everything, both good and bad, for Luka. So if you find success with the Lakers, it's going to last forever, right? You're going to be remembered forever. That's going to be a huge thing. If you're not finding success, though, that criticism is also going to be just as loud. Now, my issue is when we get into stuff like this and we look at how the media is covering certain players, and especially when we get into like player stand wars and all that kind of stuff as well, is that to Jovan's point, in terms of having the loudest take out there, that naturally pushes people into the extremes. And I think we do a pretty good job here of staying in the world of truth, because my concern is that we ultimately lose truth in that, because we're so determined to whatever it is, we have to turn the volume way up on it, right? Because that's what gets a reaction. It's the same concept in professional wrestling. The best professional wrestlers are guys that take their personality and they turn the volume way up because there's an authenticity to it, and that winds up getting a reaction from the crowd. People do the same thing when they're trying to do takes. It's almost like cutting a wrestling promo. You have to take something that you think, hey, Luka's not very good on defense, and you have to turn the volume way up. Luka is the worst ever on defense. They can never win with this guy. Look at him. He's an asshole out there, not even trying. All this, right? That's what people are doing. You turn the volume way up on this stuff, and I think what happens, unfortunately, is you lose the truth. You lose the nuance. You lose the, hey, he sucks in this area. That's true. He's having problems in this area. Here's how he can get better. Here's the reasons why he's a star, though. Here's the things that he's doing great. And oftentimes, in the desire to lean towards one extreme or the other, we wind up losing the area where the truth lies. And that's what I think is truly unfortunate with this.
Yep, totally agree. Look at him. He's out there being an asshole.
Well, how many times do you see Luka die on screens? I'm like, going, oh, come on. Speaking of which, we need to talk about DeAndre Ayton.
Should we do the tractor ad?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, guys, quick break. This one's actually something I've been using personally. Cold days, big games, busy schedule, no time to cook. That's why I've been rocking with Factor. I've been ordering their protein plus meals, especially the grilled chicken with roasted veggies. Perfect for me because I'm trying to keep my energy high for shows without feeling heavy after eating. What I like about Factor, quality ingredients, lean proteins, real veggies, whole food fats, no refined sugars, no artificial sweeteners, no refined seed oils, and it fits the schedule. They've got 100 rotating meals weekly, keto, calorie smart, Mediterranean, GLP-1 support, even a new Muscle Pro collection for strength and recovery. And the convenience is crazy. It's always fresh, never frozen. Ready in about 2 minutes. No prep, no stress. I use this, and you guys should too, especially if you're balancing work, school, gym, and Lakers games every other night. Head to factormeals.com/LakersPod50off and use code LakersPod50off to get 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for a year. That's 50% off and a free breakfast item in every box for a year while your subscription is active. Again, factormeals.com/LakersPod50off, code LakersPod50off. Let's get back to it.
All right, everybody, make sure you go check out Factor. Great sponsor for our channel. We certainly do appreciate them. All right, let's get into one of the more bizarre things. You know, we've talked about this, but DeAndre Ayton, not always a high effort player. In fact, very often a low motor player, and it's certainly an issue. But I thought Dave McMenamin was trying to be fairly favorable to DA in that piece that he wrote. But of course, the bit that got everybody upset, and myself included, I was pissed off when I read it. DeAndre Ayton saying, they're trying to make me Clint Capella, and I ain't no Clint Capella. Jovan, I kind of want DA to be Clint Capella.
The Lakers would love if DeAndre Ayton was Clint Capella. Well, last night even. So last night, 2 points, 4 rebounds, and 0 blocks for DeAndre Ayton. Clint Capella in a backup center role for the Houston Rockets had 4 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 blocks. The Lakers could have used that performance last night from DeAndre Ayton. But this to me, I mean, this has been obvious. This has been building toward this moment in like the crescendo of yesterday. But I thought you put it great, Trevor, with your tweet of like, don't sign up to do a Clint Capella role if you don't want to be Clint Capella. And Clint Capella was great in Houston and Atlanta during his prime in that specific role of being a rim runner and a lob threat and a high motor player who, I mean, he had multiple seasons in the 12 to 14 rebound range, really versatile defender who could switch onto guards and you know, corral them, but also protect the rim. And just a dirty work, high motor, high effort guy. The Lakers could use that guy. That's actually, I would argue, the exact guy you want next to Luka Doncic. Like if the Lakers had prime Clint Capella right now, I think they'd have a better record. I would take them more seriously as a contender in the West. He would not solve all of their issues, but prime Clint Capella is better than this version of DeAndre Ayton. We could maybe debate like 2021 Ayton when they made the finals. Like I think that's the peak version of Ayton, and he was a really good and productive player along that finals run. But the Lakers would love this version of Clint Capella. And to me, this came off as tone deaf. It came off again as DA continuing to not understand what his role was. And I think there's been some revisionist history. I've seen some of the discourse in terms of, well, what did you expect when you're adding DeAndre Ayton, and like he was supposed to have a bigger role and this and that. And it's like, no, go back and watch DeAndre Ayton's intro press conference. Go back and watch his comments at Media Day. Go back and watch his comments in the preseason. Everything was about, I don't care about how many touches I get. I'm here to rebound. I'm here to set screens. I'm here to play defense. And that's just not true. Or it was true for 6 weeks, and then it has fallen off since then. And I think like even the Orlando game, people, big performance, this and that. I thought his defense was bad in the Orlando game. I thought it was terrible last night. There's a reason why he only played 23 minutes. He got benched again in the fourth quarter and in clutch time. So like the defense, it's harder to show up on the stat sheet. It's not a rebound. It's not a block. It's not a field goal. But I think his defense has been downright bad recently, to the point of like being borderline unplayable. I think that's been a big reason why the starting group has been struggling, is like you just can't have Luka, LeBron, and DA back there as a front line. So I'm just like, could not be more out right now. I'm really disappointed with, I mean, I'm not surprised by what he said, but it's just completely tone deaf for what this role calls for. And I think the Lakers are going to have some really tough decisions to make over the next few weeks in terms of continuing to reduce his role to the point of, I've been advocating for now the past week, like just starting Jackson Hayes over him. I think that's the move I would make. I don't think they're going to do that, but I think he's, you cannot follow. The cherry on top was the game he had last night was arguably his worst game of the season. Yeah. And like for that story to drop and all of the discourse around it, then you have Clint Capella own you on Instagram stories. Like it just was, it was a disaster day for DA.
Jason, I couldn't believe that DA came out and had the game. I mean, I could believe, but I was disappointed. Like you thought, if there's ever a time where he's going to come out there and really kick ass and be focused and locked in and giving it his all, it would be that game, given all everything that was swirling around him. And instead he looked, you guys remember that meme that was going around of the security guard letting people into an arena, and he just kind of like waves his arms over the side of them to check them for any kind of items they shouldn't have? That was DeAndre Ayton's defense. I can't tell you how many times he was just standing straight up, just kind of threw an arm out or whatever, made a half-ass effort towards the ball. I couldn't believe that was the performance DA turned in, given everything around him and the spotlight that he knew was going to be on him. Plus, on the team that he used to play, like there was revenge game narrative there, and he didn't look like he cared much at all out there, Jason. I was disgusted by what we saw.
The Phoenix matchup itself is very much a scrap matchup, and as we've discussed on the show countless times this season, he's just not a scrapper. I think even like you look at that Orlando game, and there's this idea like, oh, we got to feed DA, we got to give DA the touches that he needs to be engaged, and like so much of that stuff is so matchup dependent. It depends on how you're being guarded. So like, for instance, you want to know why DA ended up getting so many post touches against Orlando? They had gone to some switching specifically with Anthony Black, and Orlando is famously one of the teams in the NBA that does not leave shooters to clock. Like they're like the opposite of Orlando in the same way that Oklahoma City, in the same way that Oklahoma City swarms everything and gives up a ton of threes. Orlando is very much like, we trust our dudes to guard one-on-one and we stay home. And so Orlando allows very few threes relative to the rest of the league, and they will let DeAndre Ayton take a hook shot over Anthony Black. And yes, in that very specific situation where a team happens to be switching and they're switching with a smaller guard and they're not swarming, they're letting Ayton go to a little left shoulder hook. Yeah, things can kind of work out for him in a way that showcases some of his skill set. He's very, very good at the hook shots this year. Even as you like dig into the numbers, when Ayton is able to get catches on rolls, he's been very useful this year. A guy who's been hitting all kinds of shots, whether it's little short mid-range jump shots, little hook shots in the lane, finishing lob dunks, that sort of stuff. As soon as the scheme shifts more towards them like playing the role or packing up a 3-on-2 against the pick and roll or any sort of real scrappy environment, things fall apart for him. I mean, even in the Orlando game, he had a lot of rebounds in that game. But as soon as that second shift came around for Mo Wagner and Mo Wagner's like really going at him with high motor, all of a sudden DA couldn't grab a damn rebound. And, you know, and it became a big problem down the stretch. And so like, ultimately, all this comes down to a fundamental lack of understanding of what really any team is asking for from the center position, not just the Lakers. Like the idea that there is this role that they're trying to force on DA is insane. Like even just among the stars, it depends game to game how they're going to attack. Certain games, there's going to be more of a speed attack and they're going to play more through Austin. There's a stretch in the third quarter where they're posting LeBron up over and over again. Why? Because they're guarding him with these small guards that can't keep him off of the out from underneath the basket. Like every basketball game is its own unique organism. But the one thing that is always the case every single night is the Clint Capela role. Defending in specific ball screen coverages, controlling the defensive glass, screening and rolling hard, even if they are guarding you, so that you can be that cog in the system that's leading to those openings on the weak side for the other players. And really, that's the part that sucks about all this with DA. If there was a specific type of game every single night, he'd be a 20-12 kind of guy, but that's not how basketball works. And he's convinced that that's something that's under the Lakers' control when it's just not. That's very much opponent specific. And he's unwilling to do the things that are actually on the table every single night for him. And when he says Clint Capela, that's the thing that's so funny about him not understanding it. What he's referencing is that role. He's referencing the role that is an every night role. I don't care if it's fucking Nikola Jokic or if it's, you know, Isaiah Hartenstein or if it's, you know, Robert Williams over in Portland or if, like, it doesn't matter who it is, every single game, There is low-hanging fruit for every center to capitalize on that is not associated with what the opponent is doing. And DA just does not see that stuff. He doesn't value that stuff. And frankly, if he did, like, this is the funny thing. Like, if he was willing to embrace that role, there'd be a four-year, $60 million contract waiting for him after this year. He'd have a long NBA career ahead of him because he's still very talented. There's a version of this story where his player option is his last time playing in an NBA jersey. That is a legitimate possibility now because of this lack of understanding that he struggles with.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. That is exactly the point I've been making with this situation. The stuff that the Clint Capela role is the prerequisite. That's what gets you on the floor, keeps you on the floor, keeps you in a jersey. The other stuff is going to be determined by how the defense is playing you because, frankly, he's not good enough to be somebody that you game plan for to get the ball to him 20 times in the post or whatever. You're not going to do that. There will be times where the defense plays you in such a way that the rest of his offensive game, which has some diversity to it, can really be explored. But there's going to be matchups where that's not the case. Every single night, rebounding, screening, rolling hard to the rim, protecting the paint, those are the musts. That's what gets you on the floor. The other stuff is the bonus. And he seems to be completely missing on this. Jovan, I'm more convinced now than ever that he's picking up the player option because I don't think anybody's going to give him $8.1 million this summer.
That's the way it looks like it's trending. But I also think if you're the Lakers, then with that context, then maybe you do consider reducing his role even further or moving him to a bench role to set. Yep. Because, you know, there's been the notion of you don't want to upset him. You don't want him to check out. You don't want to lose him. But if you do shift the role dramatically and it starts to be, okay, well, you're not going to get the Clint Capela role because you are indeed not Clint Capela. So now you're going to be maybe Clint Capela in Houston now as the backup big playing 15 minutes a night. Like you can play that role. And maybe that pushes him to a point where he wants to opt out because, I mean... Mm-hmm. The thing here is like if he opts in, I mean, it would be a complete dereliction of their offseason duties to return next season with DeAndre Ayton as their starting center. Like, I think a lot would have to change here and go right for that to even be a theoretical possibility. So if he's opting in next year, I mean, you could try to trade him in the summer, but I think the Lakers need to send the message of like, you are not the center of the future. And I think that message has been sent to some degree, but it might need to be a stronger message if he continues to be this inconsistent. And even to Jason's point, like I felt like the Orlando game was the game to be like, okay, if I'm going to be fed, then I'm going to defend and play at a certain level. I just don't think he did that defensively. So it's like, I also don't even think there's a correlation anymore between him like playing hard and like getting touches. I think maybe that was earlier in the season. I think now it's just like he's kind of checked out on the defensive end and is going through the motions, and he still wants his touches though. So yeah, I mean, I think they're in a tough spot, but I don't think he could be the starting center beyond this season. And honestly, I would be considering different options right now anyway.
Yeah, I think they have to. I think that's the point they're at. They have to start really considering other options. He's not helping them on the floor right now. He was useful in that Orlando game just offensively, but he did nothing last night. He was on the floor, but there wasn't anything being provided by DeAndre Ayton in last night's game.
That position too is like a loud position. Like when there's a big who's playing hard and doing his job, it always jumps off the screen. And it's like, it's just a position you can't afford to have a low motor player. It drops the bottom out on both ends. It's just, it's brutal.
And that doesn't make adding Ayton necessarily the wrong decision when we look at what the alternative option, although ironically, Clint Capella would maybe be an alternative option this past summer. But like, I think it was a defensible decision to go add DeAndre Ayton over the summer, and especially, you know, the contract they added him on. Of course, there's a player option. We can quibble over that. But it made sense in the context of, would you rather roll the dice on DeAndre Ayton or get 57-year-old Brooke Lopez and pay the same money, right? Or if not more. I get the decision to give it a shot with DA. It's just, we're at a point where it's not working out. And I'd be surprised if he's back next year. I'm not saying, I think he picks up the option just because I don't know if the money is there otherwise, but I could see the Lakers moving on from him unless they really drive home, as Jovan's saying, drive home the point. Yeah, you ain't it, Ayton. Then maybe they do get him to just say, that's it. I'm not going to pick up the option just so I can be somewhere else. Guys, we're already in overtime here. We haven't gotten to any of the chat questions yet. We had a lot to get into. I could stick around for a bit and do a few of these. But
I don't mind going for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You guys want to do like 10 minutes? We can go a little bit. We can go quicker through them.
Okay. I will go. I'll do this weekend. I'll put together some of the ones that we made. So we have some from last show as well. All right. Christian said, feels like this recent stretch could either take the Lakers to a higher ceiling we didn't think possible or completely shatter them. Your thoughts? I don't know. I mean, Jason, you were just talking about how the criticism of Luka could ultimately spur him to greater heights. This is a much more glasses half full approach, I suppose, than I had really considered, that the recent stretch could take the Lakers to a higher ceiling.
They have just not had any runway at all with the three stars. So to your point, Christian, like literally if LeBron, Luka, and Austin just all stay healthy and play in most of the 17 games in March and they roll up into the playoffs just in a much better offensive rhythm, they have a puncher's chance. Because then at that point, it's like maybe JJ throws together a game plan that works. Maybe these Lakers can scale things up defensively. Like, again, I'm not optimistic, but like if there's one obvious context to all of this, it's that we just have a handful of games with LeBron, Luka, and Austin consecutively playing together. If they play for six straight weeks, mostly together, maybe they're able to achieve a level of rhythm that captures some of that offensive upside that was always potential there for this group.
All right, let's go here. I can't believe Ayton put
up
an
Alex. You had something you want to say.
I'm more pessimistic. I'm kind of at the point where I don't think it works. And I think we have enough of a sample size. Like I think they have if you look at regular season last year, playoffs last year, and regular season this year, you combine all of the sample size with this with those three, I think it's like in the low 700s minutes wise, they have like a -4 net rating. So, I mean, it was better last year, but even last year they were sort of around neutral. I think they entered the playoffs like a +1. They exited the playoffs a -1. I just feel like we've seen enough of a sample size that like those three just kind of don't work together. Now, can you stagger the rotation to the point that you can maximize the non big 3 minutes and maybe like tread water with those three potentially, but you're going to be closing the final 6 to 7 minutes of no pun intended of playoff games with those three out there. And I just don't think they've gotten close to finding the right two pieces around the big three to maximize them. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible to do it. I with each loss, they're now 8-6 with the big three on the season. They have a 114 offensive rating, which is bad. They have a 118 defensive rating. That's also bad. It's like at least if they were putting it together offensively with those three and it was like, it's just the defense is the problem, I think I'd be more optimistic, but it's been awful offensively as well, in addition to the defense being bad. So I'm like, I don't think are close to putting it together on either side of the floor. So I'm pretty pessimistic about the big three's fit. Again, can they find parameters around that to still be a good team? I think that's possible, but I'm skeptical they're able to put it together with those three.
Real quick, just to add on to this too, like, I think this is important context. I think I would imagine you both agree with me. There is criticism to throw at Luka. There's criticism to throw at LeBron. There's criticism to throw at Austin. The largest criticism should be going to Rob and Jeannie, because the vast majority of these issues are roster related. 100%. I even think that's important to emphasize as it pertains to Luka. A lot of the things with Luka complaining to refs and focusing on foul grifting rather than making shots and defensive limitations, a lot of those things were there in Dallas too, but the team was better. And so it allowed Luka to at least reach heights that were a lot higher than what we're seeing now. So like, I think it's important context for us to say that like all of these dudes can get some criticism, but the biggest issue is that this roster sucks. And that really is where all of this stuff trickles down from.
I'm really glad that you made that point, because you're absolutely right. And this is the players and the coaches, right? Those are the ones that are in front of us every single day. And so it's easy to see bad things happening and associated with them. There is that unseen element of the roster construction that simply has to be acknowledged, that this group was not put together properly. They were put together with an idea that at the trade deadline, they could fill whatever holes they have remaining, that they weren't able to do that or not willing to do that. So you've got a group that simply does not work out there on the floor. I also think there's an oil and water element to LeBron and Luka, in that Luka has been on the season, at least offensively, when we talk about why they're not reaching their offensive ceiling, he's been at his best in the half court. LeBron's most effective plays have been in transition, and they're not really on the same page in terms of the pace that they want to play at in games either. And part of that is LeBron's 3-point percentage has dropped. That's been an issue, and I think it's negatively impacted their ability to attack in the half court. So it's just not working. Where Jovan said it as well, hit it on the head. It's not working with the three of them together, and I don't have a lot of optimism that they're going to figure it out here as the season goes on. This comment, can't believe Ayton put up an Alex Len type performance after all that talk he was doing. Yeah, it was pretty damning to come out in that game and play the way they did, given everything. But we already talked about
Alex Len, guys.
God, that was when it was Jackson Hayes as the starting center, and hey, there's a 7-foot-tall human being that we added to the team.
No, that's got
to
be a good thing. No, right? No. I remember I watched like an hour of film on Alex Led, which was one of the worst hours of my life. And I came on and did a live, and I was like, I'm sorry, guys, this was not the move. This dude is cooked. He cannot do anything on either side of the ball. And there's a lot of people who had the initial initial optimism of no, like he used to be a rotation player 3 years ago. And it quickly then immediately after the first game against Utah, everyone was like, all right, get this guy off the team.
He literally looked like the game was moving way too fast for him. Like it was almost like he was doing the right thing 2 seconds late every single time.
Tyler said, Braun is a negative at this point. Only Luka, Smart, and Kennard tried yesterday. JJ thoroughly outcoached by a lot. $40 million to Kessler may be the best bet. I don't know if the Jazz even let Walker Kessler go, period. Yeah. They turned down a couple of first-round picks for him. If they had a number they would break at, I would have thought they would have just moved him at that point if they were worried about losing him in free agency. That said, I mean, Braun is a negative at this point. I don't know if that's necessarily true. Like, statistically, has he been a net negative? We saw it last season where he was a net negative on the season. But I don't necessarily look, Jason. Like, if you just removed LeBron from this team, are the Lakers suddenly better? I don't think so.
This has been really frustrating too. It's the same exact thing I was just talking about with Luka. Yeah. Brian Windhorst went on ESPN and said the other day that the Lakers are an excellent team with Austin and Luka on the floor and with LeBron off. And when you add LeBron, they're a mediocre team. Or he said something like that. But he used the phrase excellent team to describe the Lakers without LeBron James. And frankly, I think that's ridiculous. I like that. This is similar to what I just said with Luka. This is a roster issue. This team does not have a single player that can reliably knock down a catch and shoot three and reliably defend. Not a single player. And they don't have a single center that can just do a basic job establishing a defensive foundation for a team. That is the problem with this team. All of the conversation around the stars is separate from that. I mean, everything I said about Luka, it is not Luka's fault that this team sucks. Let me be very clear. It is not Luka's fault. The criticisms of Luka are fair and real. It is not Luka's fault that this team is the way that they are. LeBron has had issues that have been problematic with the other stars. One, he's way too mistake prone on defense. He's been driving me crazy on film this year. Way too mistake prone on defense. And then two, he can't hit a catch and shoot jump shot to save his life, which is really hurting. Like, that's why he basically has to function out of the post with this group, because when he's standing around on the perimeter, he's not really providing a ton of value. He, like, you saw some stretches in the game last night where he was working out of the short roll. LeBron had like three or four really nice short roll reads yesterday. When he's able to play out of the other elements of his offensive skill, he's been fine, but the inability to hit catch and shoot threes has been bad. That said, like, the LeBron units by himself have been some of the best Laker units all season in a team that's really not had many units that have been successful. So, like, once again, I come back to the same thing I'd say with Luka. The catch and shoot stuff has been a problem. It's fair criticism. It's real. The defensive stuff, it's been a problem. It's fair criticism. It's real. If you have deluded yourself into thinking that this team sucks because of LeBron, you're an idiot. It's not because of LeBron. There are all of these issues that this team has. You could write an essay 700 words long on all the issues that this team has. LeBron is, his issues have been part of those issues. So has Luka's. Austin can't score anymore. That's been an issue. There's all sorts of issues, but all of it really stems from the fact that they don't have a single guy who can hit a catch and shoot three and play defense, and none of their bigs can actually anchor a modern NBA defense. That's the main reason why this team is struggling.
Mic drop.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to throw this one up last since it's directed to Jason. I figured I'd let you respond to this. Said, hey, Jason, curious that LeBron's criticisms require nuance, but critiques of Luka required no nuance and none of it was unfair.
I mean, here's the thing with Luka. We've talked about it all season. I think he's oscillated somewhere between the third and fifth best player in the NBA. We've discussed him on the show this year. We did Jovan and I did our player grades. I specifically said I give him an A- because for the most part this season he's been fantastic. He's just had specific areas where he struggled. We talked about the turnovers. We talked about the step back three that was an issue at various points in the season. We talked about the stretch after his baby was born where he struggled for a little bit. I mentioned today that he's been kind of bad since he came back from his hamstring injury before. We've applied nuance to all of it. Just frankly, there's a lot of stands that really struggle with criticism for their stars, and they can't see that there's positive feedback that's happening as well.
Exactly. Any criticism has to be immediately deflected and dismissed, and any positive feedback has to be immediately trumpeted from the mountaintops in stand culture, which is, again, where we, going back to my big thing, where you lose the truth in all of that, if you're not willing to accept criticism of a player. All right, guys, I wound up having a lot more fun on this show than I thought we were going to, give it the sour nature of the state of things. But this was a blast as always, and I hope that we have some more positive things to talk about on our next show.
These next three games are suddenly kind of must win, aren't they?
I think they'll win it, but to be, I mean, there's almost like, unless they beat all three of these teams by like 30 plus, I'm going to remain like unchanged in my like big picture outlook.
Yeah, I agree. Don't think they can right the ship, but still important that for the record that they get some.
Got to stay afloat.
Got to stay afloat.
Got to stay afloat. Yeah,
that's it. All right, everybody, thank you very much for joining us. Please make sure you do hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. I'll put together an episode of the Super Chat questions that we did not get to. Look for that sometime this weekend. Till next time, everybody, see ya and stay safe.